All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. We're going to get started. I'll tell you, we're going to do 1 or 2 hours today, depending on the number of questions we've got. The text went out a little late today, so that may be your opportunity. The calls are just starting to come in heavy now, but there's still room for questions. So if you've got a question, a comment, a topic, anything goes today, go ahead and press 1 on your phone right now. If you do it here pretty quickly, I guarantee you'll get through. So let's get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers. The list goes on and on. If you've got a question about anything at all, pick up the phone, give me a call, and we'll talk about it here on the air. We're going to get to those calls in just a little bit. A couple things. By the time you hear this, the CMC will be just a couple days away. Interesting pattern this year. This has never really happened before. Usually by the time we get down to the last couple weeks, we're not getting a lot of signups. People have pretty – well, you know, in the last couple of years, we couldn't because we've been sold out. This year, the last couple of weeks have been some of our strongest weeks for signups. It's very exciting. The other thing that's exciting is even as you hear this, there's still room. We have been sold out the last couple of years, but we moved to a much bigger venue. And if you want to come, we'd love to have you. We've got closing in on about 400 people total in the room right now. Many of those people coming back from events that they've been to in the past. Many people have been to the CMC multiple years. We're very excited about that. Here's the cool thing about signing up for the CMC right now. We have the payment program. I'll finance this for you. It only costs you about $100 if you sign up right now, and then you have over a year to pay the rest of the balance. But with only $100, you get the entire week. You get all the information, all the education, all the speakers, chances to win over $25,000 in really, really cool stuff, like about $8,000-$10,000 in Michelin tires and rims. So, and your odds are pretty good. Figure, you know, 1 in 400 or so. Actually, they're higher than that because we have lots of prizes. So lots of people win. But somebody will walk out of here with a brand new set of top-of-the-line Michelin wide singles on rims and Michelin's newest steer tire on rims. That is an amazing prize. It's so exciting every year when Michelin gives that away. We love that. But there's tons and tons more. Like I said, over $25,000 worth of stuff that our partner companies are giving away. So really, really amazing chance. And again, you spend $100 or so, you get all of that, all the breakout sessions, all the speakers, all the events, chances to win lots of cool stuff. You get it all, and you leave here and you have over a year to pay for it, but it's at that point, it's almost like it's free. I mean, it really is free at that point because you are going to learn so much information that you're going to make 10 times more than what you have to pay for the rest of the year on your payments. It really is the ultimate win-win. So we are in Council Bluffs, Iowa. We're starting Monday, May 16th, and we're going all week long, Monday through Friday, and it is jam-packed. My calendar is full from about 6 a.m. every day till about 9 o'clock every night. So lots of great stuff. We'd love to see you here, and there's still room. You can go to the website, letstruck.com, look under the events tab, or you can call us. We'll answer all your questions, and we'll get you here. 855-800-FUEL. 855-800-3835. You know, I was doing some writing this morning and thinking about some things, thinking back over my career, and I realized I bought my first truck in 1986, and this year in 2016, I sold my last truck. This is the first time in 30 years that I don't own a Class 8 commercial vehicle. I sold my last one. But I was also doing something this morning that made me realize not a whole lot has changed. I'm still on the road. I've been on the road for 2 months. I'll probably be on the road another 3 weeks or so. And doing many of the same things, just now in a vehicle about the same size and weight. We're about 75 feet long and right around 60-some thousand pounds. And still dealing with, you know, a lot of the same things I dealt with when I was on the road driving a commercial vehicle. One of the things that I just dealt with this morning, in fact, if you hear some noise in the background, it will be this. I needed some tires on this coach. Now, basically the same size tires that most of you use and the same tires I've bought for 30 years, but this was a little different. The coach has an 18,000-pound front axle, so the best tire on this application is a Michelin XZA2 Energy. Really an amazing tire, though. In fact, if not sure why I didn't play around with this tire more on trucks. It does require a slightly bigger rim, but it's got a very low rolling resistance and a very low profile. It might even be really interesting to outfit a tractor with these all the way around. Maybe even in place of the wide singles. That'd be interesting. I love wide singles, but I've talked about the idea of building a four-axle combination. So a trailer with a spread axle so that we can carry 40,000 pounds on the trailer instead of 34 with the closed tandem, then doing a single-axle tractor and being able to scale 20,000 pounds on that single axle or close to it because tires, and then a heavier steer axle. And looking at this tire, you could go all the way to 18,000 pounds on the steer axle. So if we start looking at that, 40 on the trailer, 20 on the drive, we're at 60, 18,000 on the steer axle, we could conceivably gross 78,000, just a shade under the 80,000 you're doing on five axles, but we would be significantly lighter so that we'd be able to scale more payload on four axles. So that's a really interesting concept. I've also talked about matching that with a sliding kingpin and a sliding fifth wheel, which gives you all kinds of control on where you put the weight. So pretty interesting. Now, I did get a little bit of sticker shock. I ordered the tires this morning. They should be showing up here in a little bit and installing them. Of course, counteract balance beads going in as well. This tire, it's a load rate L, like I said, 9,000 pounds per tire. So perfect for an 18,000-pound axle. But it was $745. Well, that was the list price. I'm waiting to hear back on my Michelin Advantage price, which I think is going to be pretty significant savings. So if you're not a member of Michelin Advantage, you really should be. I am got other stuff to talk about, but I think what I'm going to do is get to your calls and find out what it is you want to talk about today. Let's start off in Ohio. Herschel, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how you doing today?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, I have two for you. One about lard, and oddly enough, one about almonds. How about that for a connection?
Oh, yeah.
I like that.
Both good, healthy fats.
Well, I've been looking for lard, and everywhere I look around South Central Ohio, the only thing that I've found so far is a brand called John Morrell. They're out of Cincinnati. They make all kinds of different meats, bacon, and that kind of stuff. But the lard that they sell says it has BHA, like Boy Henry Apple, and Boy Henry Tom, BHT, in it for preservative for taste. And I'm thinking, something with an initial, is that even safe to eat? I don't know.
I wouldn't, because we don't need it. The beauty of saturated fats is that they're incredibly stable. They're the most stable fats around. That's why, one of the reasons why they're so good. They don't need preservatives. So let me get to a break, and I'll come back and we'll talk about that. And I've got an excellent brand for you, and actually a couple resources where you can buy those kind of things. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. We're going to get right back to some phone calls. I was talking with Herschel in Ohio. So, Herschel, yeah, I would not buy any lard from the standard grocery store. Much of it does have preservatives. Some of it's actually hydrogenated, which we certainly don't want. But there are a couple really good labels now of grass-fed lard and pastured lard and grass-fed tallow, beef tallow and lamb tallow, duck fat, my two favorite brands. And there are some stores you can buy them at, but it's just easier to order them online and usually cheaper. There's a company called Epic that makes really good grass-fed, like beef jerky and some other stuff, and they make a whole line of fats. Tallows, lard, all kinds of things.
EPIC?
Yep, EPIC. And then there's another one, and I stocked up on a bunch from them called Fatworks.
Okay.
And it's all natural, grass-fed, really high-quality stuff. Then there's I like beef tallow so much, and I still like some fried foods. I've learned to fry at much lower temperatures now, and beef tallow works really well for that. So if you fry at a low enough temperature, you don't damage the fats. So I actually, there's another website that I order stuff from called US Wellness Meats. And because I use so much beef tallow, like in a fryer, I bought a 5-gallon bucket of grass-fed beef tallow, and the price was pretty darn good.
How long will something like that keep, a bucket that big?
Virtually forever. That's the thing. It's such a stable fat that, you know, if you, it comes in a you know, it's not glass or anything, so no sunlight gets to it. You store it in a cool place. It'll last for a very long time. Years.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I read all kinds of stuff. I'm getting more like you all the time. My wife says, "Do you ever get tired of reading and listening to podcasts?" I said, "Well, no, that's how I learn."
That's right.
So, anyway, one of them that I get, if I remember right, is called Local Grown. It's an email deal that they send you stuff. Some of the stuff makes you scratch your head. Some of it will make you mad, and some of it will make you think. It depends on the email that day. But the one that they sent the other day was about almonds, and it was about the way that they are treated, and it said that every almond that comes into the United States has two different treatments that they use. One of them is from heat, and the other is a chemical treatment that I wish I could remember the name of. And it's because of a salmonella outbreak back in, I think it said, like middle 50s or something like that. So now I'm thinking, is almonds even safe now? I don't know.
Yeah, so what you're thinking of is propylene oxide.
There you go.
Yep, that's the other treatment. You know, I've looked at this. It's virtually impossible now to get raw almonds. They are treated, thanks to our government again.
Exactly.
It's just amazing. It's just amazing. We can take one incident where somebody eats something and gets sick. And in order to fix that problem, the government treat everything with something that makes everybody sick eventually. So it's kind of like, you know, the raw milk thing. You know, I've studied this pretty deep because I like almonds. Almonds have a tremendous amount of benefit, health benefits, and there's not a lot of direct evidence that even I do try to find. I do try to research my brand and see if it's been lightly pasteurized and heat treated instead of chemically treated. But I also, you know, if I'm somewhere and I want some almonds, I'm going to buy them and I'm going to eat them. I did the research. The propylene oxide, there isn't any real direct evidence that the amount you're getting in an almond is going to create damage. Especially, one of the other things we have to remember, almost all the limited amount of testing that has been done is always done on people who are eating a standard American diet. And they're eating lots of processed foods, and they're getting very little nutrition. So we, people like that, all of us, when we eat that way, we tend to have this buildup of all kinds of stuff that's bad for us. And that's really where I think most of the problems come from. So now that I'm eating a really clean diet, you know, not a lot of processed food, I'm getting a lot of nutrition, I'm doing things that help me detox my body. If I'm going to eat almonds for the benefits, and I'm not going to worry too much about the downsides of getting a little bit of this. Does that make sense?
It does, and you know what I almost wonder when I see something like this is, where is that report coming from? If that report comes from the federal government agency that's doing all this and putting the regulation on, well, clearly their study is going to be jaded to their benefit and want to do what they want to do, so it's not going to be deemed okay because that's who did the study. That's why I was curious.
Yeah, you're right. And so you're doing a couple things really right. One, you're reading, but even more important, you're questioning what you're reading and where the source is and where did it come from and double-checking and cross-checking, and that's what you've got to do. And then sometimes you've just got to make a decision. You know, this is the world we live in. Unless we live on an organic farm and try to grow all this stuff ourselves, sometimes we just have to make a decision on – you know, some balance. You know, there's nutrition here. There's something that might cause a little bit of harm over a very long period of time, but that's probably in the setting of the standard American diet. So there are way, way worse things we could be eating than almonds, even if they're treated this way. So I'm not going to worry too much about it.
Okay, no problem. Thank you, Kevin.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to Pennsylvania. Matt, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call today. I think we're to the point where we're ready to add a truck, sort of a backup for now, but hopefully put the first driver in. We have our own authority. I got my eye on three different trucks. I was hoping you could help me narrow it down.
Okay.
I got one that a pre-EGR 01 ISX. The engine is relatively young for being in an 01. The engine came out of a crashed vehicle and was swapped over to a chassis with about 800,000 on it. So the engine itself only has maybe 350,000 on it. The second one, and you would know why, would be the 9300 3406E with 700,000 on it. That's untouched, and it's a Florida truck. And then the third one, it would be a 016NZ that somebody's put a lot of money in and rebuilt a lot of things on it. Of course, it's the most amount of money, too. It's close to $30,000.
Okay. So, without knowing anything else about the rest of the truck, based on the engine alone, and this is personal preference, you're not going to go wrong with either three of these engines. I mean, you're going to be okay with either one. There's nothing about any of them that would totally scare me away. But I'm not quite the fan of the ISX. I've never owned one. I think they're a little overcomplicated. So I've stayed away from that engine. But there are people who have owned many of them and love them. If they're pre-emission, that's just more of a preference on my part. The 3406E, kind of the same way. Cat was kind of late to the game on electronics. So while Detroit electronics in the late 90s were awesome, I wasn't real wild about Cat's electronics. They're pretty limited. So I really kind of prefer the 6NZ. And it sounds like that one's kind of a premium engine anyway with everything that's been put into it. So the little bit more you might pay for a truck like that, and when I say little bit, even if the other trucks are 15 and this one's 30, even though it's double, I don't know
right.
what the numbers are, but it really wouldn't matter. 15,000 over the life of a vehicle is no big deal.
Okay. Well, we already run a 6NZ now and getting close to 7 miles a gallon with it. I was sort of leaning that way anyway, because we're in love with the horsepower, and I don't know that I would get that with that 430 horsepower ISX.
Can get horsepower out of everything. We can get 600 horsepower out of almost any Class 8 diesel anymore, but the Cat does it better. I mean, it's got more torque. It is a heavier engine. There's another advantage here, though, too, is that you already have one. Keeping
yeah.
the same engine. You know, and then finding a good mechanic that knows that really well, there's an advantage to that instead of dealing with different engines. So I think there's a lot of reasons why that 6NZ really makes sense for you. I've got to get to a break. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rothberg. Hey, everybody, be patient. I'm going to be quiet here for about 2 minutes. I've got to call this Michelin truck and get my tire set up because he's trying to get a hold of me. So hold on. All right, everybody, thanks for being patient. We're going to go ahead and continue on here. We'll be right back.
your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. I'm going to head off to Texas. Sean, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, Kevin. How are you doing today?
Doing great. What's on your mind?
I just want to introduce the latest member to the tribe, my son, who was born last week, Damon Xander Mulvey, 5 pounds, 10 ounces.
Ah, congratulations. Hey, how exciting.
You guys have a lot in common. You're both short and bald.
Yeah, there you go. And both of us born in May.
Yeah, May 1st. He just made it by 57 minutes. So,
oh, wow.
I have my company is going to purchase, I own my truck outright, but they're purchasing 50 Bose Ride seats. And I did buy one from them. They're going to install it in a couple weeks, but I wanted to check out, wanted to know anything I need to look out for. I run mostly Texas, a lot of gravel roads, secondary roads that I travel in. I was curious, will that seat operate differently when I'm constantly bumping up and down, or is it pretty much going to smooth everything out to the best of its ability?
You know, here's the interesting thing about the seat. It is so different. It's hard to explain to somebody until you experience it. Now, I was there at Bose before they ever released it. It was still in development, and I got to test it then and go through simulators. And the simulator was very, very interesting. But nothing really prepared me for having it in the truck the first time. Now, I don't want to scare you, but for the first 45 minutes, I thought I made a mistake. I thought that I'm really not going to like this thing. Let me give you an example of what happens. You know, after a million miles in a truck, you get pretty used to what happens in an air ride seat because that's what we had. You know, when you hit a bump in an air ride seat or a dip, you feel the truck go into the dip, you feel the seat drop and kind of follow, and hopefully it kind of cushions it. When you're in the Bose ride, it's nothing like an air ride, drops into the dip. The seat stays level, which actually makes it feel like it went up. But what really happened was the truck went down, and the seat stayed where it was. It's a very odd feeling in the beginning. It almost gave me a little bit of a vertigo kind of thing. It was just so unexpected. But it really, it wasn't even an hour of driving. And you started to get used to it, and then you started realizing how much better this was. And the really wild thing is to, like, I don't recommend doing this long, but it was fun to pick your feet up off the floor because then all the vibration in your body goes away. Take your hands off the wheel and close your eyes. Not for long, but it's like all sensation goes away. Like you don't even know you're in a moving vehicle anymore because it just isolates everything. It's wild.
Yeah, I've wanted one for about 7 years, and I finally decided, okay, I'm going to set it. I just turned 40. I need to take care of my spine because I want to do this for another 30 years. I enjoyed the work. I enjoyed doing it. I don't have to do it for 30 years. I don't want to. I want to make sure when I'm 70, I can still walk straight, upright.
Yeah.
But our company, they're going to install it all said and done for $3,500.
Oh, man, that is awesome. What a
and
great
they have a deal
price.
With the late. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those big box carriers out of Springfield, Missouri, but I've been with them for 6 years, and I have a good niche with what I do. I just run out of Texas, have my own dedicated work. So, and even though I'm going to get a new truck in about a year and a half, you know, I still want to put it on my current truck. It's my, I think somebody stole my shocks out of my truck the other day. It seems like every day I drive this truck, it just gets harder. But my next truck, when I buy my next truck, I'm looking to spend the extra $1,000 to get a front air ride suspension. Do you recommend doing that with the Bose and Road Kings, or is that overkill?
I don't think anything's overkill, really, because I've been through all three of those, and I can tell you each one was an improvement. The Air Ride front axle was pretty amazing. The Road King shocks, you know, the Road King shocks for me, more about handling than ride. They actually have a pretty firm ride, but it's firm in a really good way. It's not a big, soft, cushy ride. So you get the really nice handling from the Road Kings. You get the soft from the Air Ride, and then you get the elimination of all vibration from the Bose. You know, a lot of people think of their spine. No question it's going to help that, absolutely. What most people don't realize is a lot of the damage that's done over the years isn't from the big bumps. It's from that constant vibration. And the seat is actually tuned to eliminate vibration the way that their headphones eliminate sound. So long-term vibration does a lot of damage to our body that we don't even realize that's what caused it. And that's where Bose found that they really make a huge difference by isolating your body from all that vibration all day long, not just those big bumps you hit once in a while.
Yeah, like I said, I'm looking for long-term because I'm actually getting aged out of this truck, and I don't mind being forced to get a new one, mainly because with my debt, even with this truck, my lifetime, I've got $1 for a mile net lifetime, as long as I've had this truck with the lease and being paid off. So with my niche, it's fine. Plus, my next truck, I want to have an automated transmission because I drive Houston, Dallas, San Antonio every day.
Oh yeah.
But when I buy my next truck, I'm gonna time it just right where I can keep it for 9 years. But I'm also not worrying about what's gonna happen in 9 years because with my luck, I might win the lottery or I might. But okay, well, I appreciate it. I'll definitely report back after my findings in about a month or two.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to hear it because I hear back from a lot of people with the Bose Ride. They absolutely love it. And I moved mine through multiple trucks. You know, I had mine when we were building the gliders. And if I remember right, I think I might have had that seat in 5 different trucks. It's certainly a little more difficult to remove and install than a standard seat because there's some extra wiring. But it's not that big of a deal. Like I said, I moved it to 5 different trucks. Let's go to Idaho. Gary, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Is there a way to log on to Blogspot Radio and listen to your Sunday show again?
There
is it only a live opportunity?
Now, I'll tell you what I'm thinking about doing. Do you listen during the week to the midnight show?
Yes.
So here's what I'm thinking about doing, because we've had a lot of requests for the weekend shows. The last couple weekends, we've had really good topics and good calls. And so I think what I'm going to do next week is the CMC, so I won't be able to record during the day. So I'm thinking that I'm going to take the 2 weekend shows, break them up into 1-hour shows, and run them next week.
That would be awesome. I love it.
Yeah,
that
so,
would be great.
Yeah, I certainly don't have time to record next week, but between now and then I have some time to do some editing, so I think I'll edit those weekend shows. So either people that heard them and want to hear them again or missed them get a chance to next week in the midnight slot.
No, thank you very much. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's see. Let me check the time here. You know what? I'm heading into a break here. So I'm going to take us into a break, and when we come back, we're going to get to more of your calls and questions. CMC coming up. So excited. Now, this coming weekend is the weekend before the CMC, and we kind of have a tradition that we do our live show on Saturday and Sunday, and I think we'll be parked right outside the Mac Center, and if weather permits, I will take the show outside of the coach, and we'll have a little party in the parking lot, and you can listen to the show live here. So if you're in the area, stop by and see us both Saturday and Sunday. Then, of course, all week long, the 16th through the 20th, we'll be doing the CMC. I do have one interview that I'm going to record during the CMC that will be a show we'll play on Destination Health. It's with Dave Asprey from Bulletproof, the guy who kind of created Bulletproof Coffee and many other really cool things. I'll be interviewing Dave live during the CMC, and we're going to set it up so that you can come in the room and listen while I do the interview. Then the following weekend, after the CMC is over, we will be live again from the parking lot here at the Mac Center. So looking forward to all of that. I'm going to get to a break. We're going to come back and get to your calls and questions right after this. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rothberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment of this hour, so I'm going to get right back to the calls. I'm going to head off to Miami this time. Marco, welcome to the program.
Yes.
Yep,
hi, Kevin.
It's your turn. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call.
Hey there.
Hey, yeah. I wanted to find I know you've gone over this before, but I've changed companies and my costs are different, and I forgot how I did it before. What are the things that I need to have to figure out my my cost per mile?
Okay. Certainly, I'm going to put in a little plug here for my software. The best way to calculate cost per mile is to let our software do it. Because it's real simple. You put in your settlements, you put in all your receipts, and whenever you want, you go in and look at a report that breaks everything down by revenue per mile, cost per mile, net, all kinds of things. But I'll give you a simple formula because, you know, you can do this with a calculator and a pencil. So here's what you do. You first determine a time frame. And this is totally up to you. I mean, you could do it for a week. That's not all that accurate. You could do it for a month, which is usually the way we do it. But the longer period you do, the more accurate things become. So, you know, we always, in our software, you can pull up a month at a time. You can pull up 3 months at a time. You can pull up a half a year or a year. So just determine your time frame. And let's say that it's going to be 30 days. So on the first day, you write down your odometer reading. And there's lots of ways you can do this. I'm a firm believer in that we track all miles. I don't break things down by deadhead, loaded, empty, paid. It's too much work for me. If I can see my revenue and my expenses for all miles, that's the information I need to make decisions. I don't need to track deadhead miles. I kind of know if I'm doing a lot of deadheading and my revenue per mile isn't what I want it to be, then I need to deadhead less. I don't need to track all that. It's a lot of work. So we track all miles. Makes it nice and simple. So on the first day of your 30-day period, you write down your odometer. On the 30th day of that period, you write down your odometer. You subtract the two. That tells us all the miles we ran for the month. Now, all we need now is to take whatever number we're looking at. And I know you asked about expenses, but let's just start with revenue. You would take and add up all the revenue that you generated in that 30-day period. And then you would divide the revenue by the miles. And that tells you your revenue per mile. Now you can do the same thing with any expense. You could take fuel and add up all the fuel you paid for in that 30-day period. And then one of the ways to remember this is cost per mile is cost divided by miles. So you take your fuel cost for that period, divide it by your miles for that period, and that's going to give you a fraction or a decimal, like a 0.36. That's 36 cents a mile. So the way to remember it, cost per mile is cost divided by miles. And then you could do that for fuel, maintenance, tolls, scales, anything you want.
Okay. That's pretty simple. I have one more question. I have a 2002 Detroit Series 60. It's an old Century, but it's made me a lot of money. It's been real good to me. And
good.
We're getting the company I'm at. Yeah, I've been grandfathered, but I see coming down the road where they're putting pressure on us to get newer trucks. I've seen a lot of guys that have done the 2010s, 2012s, and they deleted the EGRs, and I think they shot weld the filter. Does that really make it like a regular truck, or
I don't think so.
What's your
opinion
on that?
I think there's three problems with that. One, it's illegal. That wouldn't necessarily stop me, but you have to realize there is some risk. Not a big deal right now. I mean, I haven't seen any individual owner-operator get in any trouble over this. I've seen where the EPA has cracked down on shops that are doing it. So it's there. I don't think it's a huge risk. That could change. That probably wouldn't worry me too much. The next two are why I wouldn't do it. One, it's expensive. If it's done right, it's expensive. And two, unless it's done right, it just doesn't work. I mean, there's all these quick fixes that don't work. There is no simple way of doing this. You literally have to go in and replace all of the emission components with, you know, the original components, and then you have to have somebody who really knows how to program the ECM correctly. And it's not cheap. So I'm not a big fan of it. If I have to have a newer truck, I'm going to look for a used glider. Or if I have the budget, I'm going to get a new glider.
Yeah, that's what I'd like to do, get a new glider. And, you know, I've looked for used gliders, and you can't find them. I mean, I can't find
them. Have you looked at Schneider's?
No.
Schneider
has
a bunch.
Cascadia's?
They were all Centuries or Columbia's.
Oh,
they were all Columbia. They built them, I'm thinking they're like 2010, 11, 12, somewhere in that range. Schneider built a bunch of them back then, and now they're at that age where they're turning them over. They're roughly $50,000 or $60,000, I think. And the last time somebody called me, they said they still had quite a few of them left.
Okay, I'll look at that. Okay. All right, well, I can't make it. I've been to your CMC before, and I really enjoyed it. Can't make it this year, but look forward to doing it next year.
There you go. Outstanding. We'll look forward to seeing you. Let's go to Illinois. Ben, welcome to the program.
Sure. I've got an AC question. It's been in the shop twice. They've put a new compressor on, new lines. What else? An evaporator and a new filter. And when I went in the second time, they replaced the compressor. The first rebuilt wasn't functioning. I was curious if you had any suggestions to a different shop I ought to take it to, as I've had about enough of them.
I do. And here's the thing. I really believe in specializing and using shops and mechanics that specialize. You know, you go to the typical truck dealer, and the mechanics are sent to an AC school, so they learn the basics, but they don't do a lot of AC work. They might be working on an engine one day, doing an oil change the next, installing a seat the day after that. They might have to go do an alignment. They might be chasing down an electrical problem, and they don't really specialize in anything, so they're doing stuff once in a while. I prefer to go to somebody who does nothing but work on air conditioning all day long, nothing else. And the only way to find that is to go to an automotive AC shop. But you can do that because the AC system in your truck is exactly the same as an AC system in a car. So it's all the same components, all the same problems, all the same troubleshooting. So when I had my trucks, I just called around and drove around and talked to shops that specialized in AC, explained that I had a truck. I found one that had done some work on a couple trucks before and they were open to it. But I talked to a couple that had never worked on a truck, but they saw the system and they said, yeah, that's, the same stuff we always work on. So that's my recommendation for AC work is interview a couple auto shops and find somebody that'll work on it.
Okay. Will you be doing alignments at the CMC?
Yes. Yeah. The great thing about the CMC is Chad Hone is here. Chad is my, I want to say favorite alignment guy, but Chad learned everything he knows from Mike Beckett. Chad is just awesome. And Chad's here all week. He does alignment checks. And if nothing's wrong, he'll tell you nothing's wrong and you're good. If there is something that needs worked on, he'll tell you what it is. And then he schedules the work for the week that you're here.
Okay, is that all full up, or would I sign up for that?
No. You can still get in on that.
Okay. Do I just register when I get there?
Yeah, that'll be fine. In fact, if you show up, if you're planning on being here any time the weekend before, I think Chad gets here like Thursday and starts doing work because trucks start showing up early. So if you're here, he'll fit you in.
Okay. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Idaho. Frank, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kevin, for taking my call. I've got an oil sample.
All right. Let me take a look at it and see what...
Yeah. Oh, while you're looking let me give you a little bit of... Go ahead.
You know what? I wasn't paying attention to the clock. We're going to have to take this call on another show because I've got to get out of here. These hours during the week just fly by. So many questions, so little time, but we'll get back to it. So thanks for joining me, and we will see you next time. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work. And master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody, we're going to do another hour, so here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, getting your own authority. You name it, we'll tackle it here on this show. All you have to do is pick up the phone and call us. And I'll tell you, these hours during the week go by so fast that instead of doing an open tonight, I think I'm going to get right to your phone calls. And we're going to start off in El Paso. Angel, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. How are you doing today?
Doing great. What can I help you
with? I just got started in truck driving and... I got an offer from my uncle to go and pretty much take over his operation. And my question is, How does it work? How do the taxes work when you do a 1099?
Okay, so let's talk. When you say take over his operation, does that mean all of the revenue is going to come to you and then you're going to pay all the expenses?
From my understanding is that I'm taking over the truck and running his operation, and he's going to take a percentage of the pay and pay the expenses himself. He wants to retire from being the driver. I'm pretty much taking over the driving portion of it.
Okay, excellent. So that's going to be a little different then. So it's fairly simple for you. So what you're going to do, he's going to give you a 1099 based on how much money he actually gave to you. He's going to fill out his tax return with all the revenue and whatever expenses he pays, and then he's going to pay you, and you're going to get a 1099, and it's going to say you got X amount of money. So it's pretty simple. I mean, you'll fill out a tax return. I don't want to get too technical here because you need somebody that does this for you, the tax return part. But what we have to figure out for you, the important part we have to figure out is what expenses are you going to have that are deductible? And what you need to think of in your mind is any money you spend to get your job done is going to be deductible.
Okay.
Your biggest is going to be per diem. Every night you're away from home, or every day you're away from home, you're not doing any kind of a local operation where you're back every day, right?
No, I'd be home on the weekends maybe.
Okay, so then you'll probably have like 5 days of per diem every week. And all you really don't need to do anything for that. Just keep your logbooks, or if it's electronic logs, print something out. Keep some sort of a record of the nights or days you're away from home, and that will get you your per diem deduction. Then you just have to think any time you spend money, if you buy supplies while you're on the truck, if you buy things to clean it, if you buy, you know, work boots or gloves or anything like that, keep those receipts, and that will be deductible. Now, the other thing you have to keep up on is that when you're paid on a 1099, nobody is withholding taxes, but the IRS doesn't want to wait till the end of the year to get their money, and you don't want to wait till the end of the year to pay it because it's going to be a lot. So you want to set it aside every week. So I'll give you kind of a rough idea. Whatever he pays you that week, I want you to set aside about, about 15% of that amount. So if he were to give you $1,000 that week, you need to set aside between $150 and $200 of that money, put it in a savings account, and then once a quarter, four times a year, you're going to make what's called an estimated tax payment. Now, it's pretty simple, but I know this sounds complicated and you're not going to know exactly where to go or what to do. The most important thing is set the money aside every week.
Okay.
Then what you need to do as soon as you start is contact a tax preparer, and they can set you up to make those quarterly estimated payments. You can call us. We do it. And we'll just set you up, and we'll give you the paperwork, and we'll say, here's the date. And then on that date, you'll write a check, you'll stick it in the envelope, and send it to the IRS.
Okay. Now, doing it as a 1099 and sending my my taxes in quarterly, would I still receive a refund if I overpaid, or how does that work?
So then what will happen is we go all year, and we're just estimating, we're just guessing how much tax you're going to owe. At the end of the year, we'll do your tax return for you, and if you underpaid, we'll say, hey, you still owe them $300, and you send it in with your tax return, or we'll say, hey, you overpaid. You have two choices. Let's say you overpaid by $1,000. You could choose to have the IRS send the $1,000 back to you, or you could just say, and we'll help you with all this, you could just say, hey, hold on to that $1,000, and I won't send you as much this quarter.
Oh, okay, okay. Okay, I got it. Sounds good.
So, again, the real key, the most important thing I want you to get out of this is set the money aside every week. Don't get behind on it. Everything else can be figured out later. Don't sweat the paperwork. Don't sweat how you make the payments, where you send them to. We can handle all of that for you. The one thing we can't handle for you, and that's why it's so important that you do it, set the money aside every week. Don't get behind on this. All right, I'm going to get to another call. We are off to Idaho. Frank, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kevin, for taking my call. I've got an oil separator. I've got an oil
Yep, while I'm looking at it, why don't you tell me a little bit about the truck?
It's a 2010 Freightliner Cascadia with a DD15. I do the oil changes every 25,000 miles. I poured in a gallon of oil at 10,000 miles. That's it.
All right, so it looks like... I don't see any mileages on this. How many miles were on the truck when you took this sample?
1.2 and a half, almost 1.3 million.
Okay, and how many miles were on the oil?
Let's see, 12,000 miles.
Okay. So a couple kind of odd things going on, and we may need to see another oil sample and get some history. Most of this stuff looks good. We don't have any fuel dilution. We don't have any soot. Viscosity, base, oxidation, nitration, they all look great. We have two weird kind of readings here. We have high potassium, but no sodium, very little sodium. Do you happen to haul in and out of any kind of a chemical plant?
No, I'm over the road, but no, I haven't been to any chemical plants lately.
Okay, I see that the sample was back in February. Were you running in a part of the country that uses like de-icers on the road?
I was, yes, I was doing a lot of Northeast. I was in Wisconsin and Michigan.
That could be it. There's a lot of potassium in some of the things that some states use to de-ice. So when potassium shows up by itself, I don't worry too much about it. If it shows up with a lot of sodium, then it's coolant. Then we have a antifreeze leak. So let's ignore the potassium for now. It's not that high, and I don't really see any sodium. The other weird one is aluminum. Now, aluminum usually is upper end wear, and that's kind of to be expected. You're getting up there in miles. Is this engine using any oil yet?
No, about a gallon every 10,000-11,000 miles.
Yeah, you know, that is a little bit of a wear for DD15, but nothing to be concerned about. So there's nothing I would do different right now. I would just keep doing oil samples. Is the more history we have, the more we're going to be able to figure out. But there's nothing in this sample right now that would worry me. In fact, for an engine with that many miles, the sample looks excellent. But keep sampling and call me back, and we'll start to look at any patterns that might show up. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rothman. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get right back to the calls. We're off to New York this time. Charles, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. Got a situation.
You're welcome.
I want to get your opinion. Yeah, we've got a situation. I want to get your opinion on it. I got an outer frame done to my truck at a local shop in my town, and well, he quoted me a price of 20. Wound up being 24 after everything was said and done. That wasn't the issue. Well, I wound up giving him $22,000, and I told him I'd pay him $2,000 over time. Well, as I've been driving the truck, I found out they didn't hook the reverse light back up, and they improperly installed the hoses because they changed all of my water hoses. They improperly installed a hose, which caused the hose to fail, and all coolant leaked out. That cost me $948.05 to get it done in Connecticut. Had to replace the air compressor line because it's a hole in the line that wasn't there before. And now I'm putting rear motor mounts on because they replaced the front ones, but they didn't replace the back ones. And every time I had a load on it, it would twist so bad that I couldn't even get the truck in gear. And these are the things that happen after they fixed it. Yeah. So my thing is,
right.
I was going to pay him the money. Do I pay him the money, or do we go and negotiate with him, or you know, how does that work out?
Yeah. So I hate situations like this. There's never a good answer. And this isn't necessarily for you right now. This is for everybody else listening.
Mm-hmm.
This is why I sound like a broken record when I say find good shops, build relationships. And hopefully we get the time to build the relationship before we have to do a big repair. And it's not always possible, but I want people to be thinking that way. It's so important. We don't want to end up in this situation because I don't have any good answers for you. I have some advice. And we will just try to make the best of this we can. Here's your question. Should I go negotiate with them? Absolutely. And be as nice as you can possibly be. And I know that's difficult. I know it's hard to be patient. It's hard not to be angry. But that will get us nowhere. I mean, you've got to go in and be as nice as you can be and be firm in asking for what you need, but don't insult anybody, don't get angry, don't shout, be very professional about it. That may get you somewhere, and you have to negotiate. Here's why. If you choose just not to pay them, you're
right.
going to lose this. And the reason you'll lose it is it's easy for them to prove that you owe them money and you didn't pay them, but it's very, very difficult for you to prove that they did anything wrong. I'm not saying they didn't do things wrong. It certainly sounds like they did. But if this has to go to court, and that's, you know, if you guys can't negotiate this, that's the only other way to solve this is by going to court. If you just refuse to pay them, it's easy for them to get a judgment against you. All they have to do is say, look, here's the bill. Here's what he's paid us. And unless he can prove he paid us more, they win. But if you try to say they screwed up this, they screwed up, those are difficult things to prove. I believe you. I understand it. Judges don't. To a judge, it's just two people coming in, and they both have their own stories. But, hell, he doesn't know anything about this.
Right.
So you've got to do the best you can to negotiate this. And I absolutely would. I mean, what I would be asking for is you've already paid them 22 some thousand and it was 24. I'd be asking for them to wipe out the rest of the bill.
Okay. Well, that's what I'll do. And I'll take them all the bills that I got, you know, all the mechanic work that's been done on it. So
yeah.
That's what I'll do.
Yeah. I think that's fair to ask for. We'll find out how fair they are. And, you know, honestly, everybody makes mistakes. You know, this could be a great shop that just happened to have a new mechanic in, and he made a couple mistakes. So if they're good about working with you on this, that may still be a shop you want to build a relationship with. I mean, I don't write somebody off at the first time they make a mistake. If they're willing to work with me and fix their mistake and I can see that they're trying, I you know, that may still be somebody. Now, on the other hand, if they say, screw you, you owe us the money, we didn't do anything wrong, and even if we did, too bad, well, then
right.
Obviously we're not going to work with them anymore.
Absolutely. I sure appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's get to Washington. Adam, welcome to the program.
Hey there, Kevin. I just had one question for you. About a month or so ago, I heard you talking about Pittsburgh Power working on some DPF filter for the gliders that would be, like, interchangeable for, like, going out to California. And I was just wondering,
yeah.
Is that something they're close with, or if it is happening, do you know when, or?
I can't give you a date. I would say that they are close, and there's something else, you know, I'll tell you. A lot of times projects like this take a lot of time. One of the things that Pittsburgh Power has been doing over the last several months, that they brought John back, one of the engineers there, who's just an amazing guy, and they are dedicating a lot of time and people and resources to research and development. So what I'm seeing is they are developing stuff really quickly now and doing it really well. John is an amazing guy. He's, you know, kind of the driving force behind a lot of these projects, and things are getting done faster than I expected them to get done. So it's exciting. The one thing that could hold them up on this, the one unknown, is they're not manufacturing this DPF. They're working with another company to build it, you know, a certain way with certain specs. So it could be the other company that holds this up. That's why it's really hard for me to give you a hard date. But I know they're putting a lot of time and effort, and they're staying on top of it.
Right. Do you have any idea roughly what it might cost at all, or?
You know, I think it's going to be still in that 15,000 range. I don't think it's going to be inexpensive. These things are really costly to build and get certified and approved, and there's a lot that goes into them, and there's not a huge market for it, so it's kind of a specialty, which also drives the cost up. But for me, honestly, if I had a customer that was that important that I wanted to run California for, or if I lived in California, $15,000 would be a drop in the bucket. I would much rather have a pre-emission truck with a DPF like this than go spend the money and take all the risk on an emission truck.
Right. Okay. Well, that sounds great, Kevin. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's see. I better take a look at the clock here. I think I could get started on a call and then probably carry it through the break. Let's go to Texas. Jim, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, got a little sample for you today.
All right, let's take a look at it here. Oh, boy, I don't like to see
yeah.
that big red four jump out on me from the top. Wowzers. Your oil sample looks like a bunch of four-year-olds with crayons got a hold of it. That's not a good sign.
But really, all the other numbers, I think, kind of look okay except for fuel dilution. Would you agree with that?
I would. You kind of know what you're doing then when you look at this. The fuel dilution is the only real problem. All the other things are symptoms of the fact that the oil's been diluted. So you're absolutely correct. Everything else we see on here, the low viscosity being flagged, the high lead, the high iron, and honestly, the lead and iron numbers aren't that bad. So I have a feeling this really just happened pretty recently, and there hasn't been any time to do any damage. Have you changed the oil yet?
Yes, I have. And it is
okay.
30-way synthetic. So that viscosity is what? Should be a little lower for 30-way, right?
Yeah, in the maybe high 11, low 12 range, but you're at 9.1, and you have 7.8% fuel dilution. That's big. Have we done anything to address the fuel dilution yet?
No, I changed the oil earlier this week, and I figured I could probably sample at 10,000, and then if it's still I'll get it in the Pittsburgh car.
No. Not with this kind of fuel dilution. If you were at 5, maybe. I don't like to let fuel dilution go. This is a clear case of lots of fuel getting into the oil. So I want you to do two things. If you can get it in the next day or two, then okay. If it's going to be more than a couple days, I would get a gallon of Lucas into this, at least a gallon, maybe two. But you've got to get this looked at. I mean, this much fuel could do a lot of damage to an engine. I think it hasn't yet because I think it happened relatively soon before you took this sample. But I would not take a chance on this one. I would get it in as soon as possible. And if it's more than a day, I would get a gallon or two of Lucas in it to protect that engine. I don't think it's any big deal, but it will become a big deal if you leave it in there. Stick around. We'll be right back. Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody, we've got two more segments to do, which means I can probably take 4 or 5 calls. It's been kind of a weird day. We sent the text message out late. I had to take a break. So right now there aren't a lot of questions. In fact, right now there's only one. So now is your chance. There's a lot of callers. So if you want to get in, you better do it quick. But if you press 1 on your phone right now, I might be able to get to you. So their calls are already starting to come in. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. I'm going to head off to Kentucky. Dan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, good to talk to you. I hope my cell phone connection holds up. Over the past several hundreds of thousands of miles, I've gone through 3 cracked rims or wheels on the left gear axle. I've got True Balance, Centromatic, MD alignment, and I don't know why I keep getting cracked rims.
Where is the crack happening?
It starts at the lug nut, is what I believe it. The genesis is on that.
It starts where?
By the lug nut of the stud.
Okay. Has anybody really paid attention to the mating surfaces right there?
No. I'm kind of wondering if the drum has a bad surface on it.
That's what I'm thinking. What I'm thinking is we have a really bad mating surface right there at the drum. And when they crank down, you know, and torque the lug nut, it's putting the stress on that spot, and that's why it's cracking right there. I would have somebody take a really good look at the way the rim is matching up to that drum, because this really shouldn't be happening.
I agree. It's amazing how much money you can spend when you get pulled into the Port Adventure and have to call one out.
Yeah, I'll bet. Yeah, it almost seems to me like, you know, if it happens once, you could think it could have been a defect on the rim, could have been all kinds of things. It happens multiple times. It seems to me like it's got to be that mating surface, and we're just putting too much stress right there where the lug nut is.
Yeah. Well, I'll try to find a good tire shop and pull it in and have somebody look at that.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to go. It's got to be smooth, clean. Again, I see this happen a lot. You know, every time we pull a tire off a truck, we should be cleaning the studs really well with a stud cleaner. We should be cleaning those mating surfaces really well. And it doesn't happen, and a lot of times doesn't cause a problem, but here it clearly is. Let's go to Oklahoma. Paul, welcome to the program.
Howdy. Well, I'm here at the tire shop, so it's a little bit noisy. What size tires do you have on your RV?
Well, it's a little noisy here, too, because I've got a tire shop that came to me, and they're putting some steer tires on the coach right now. On the front axle on this, I have got 315 80 22 fives. It's that XZ82 Energy, which I absolutely love. It's a wide, low profile tire that carries a lot of weight.
And then another question I've got for you. As we all get older and our arms get shorter and you can't reach it without putting reading glasses on, what do you think about LASIK surgery? My long distance vision is still good, but I get sick of these damn reading glasses.
I am in that same boat. I had amazing vision most of my life. I mean, really good. When I used to coach wrestling, I always thought this was odd. You know, I was in my 30s, actually early 40s still when I was coaching wrestling, and we would be like in a gym, and I'm surrounded by a bunch of, you know, teenage kids, 16, 17, 18 years old, and I would like look across the gym and I would be reading something, and they would say, "How the hell can you read that?" I'd say, "It's really clear." But about that time, and I love to read, I read all day long. Around that time, I started noting these horrendous headaches, and I could not figure out why. It was because I needed glasses. I was squinting all the time, and so I had to start doing the reader thing, and then I had to get a little stronger and a little stronger, and I hate that I had to wear them. I would lose them. They would never be around when I needed them, and my long vision was still good. Then, as I got closer to 50, I started noticing when I was driving, I was having a tough time seeing the signs really clearly. And that was the first time that ever happened. So I went back in, and I was going to do LASIK. And they told me my eyes were still changing too much, that it wouldn't be a good idea. So I didn't do it. But what I did do was go to progressive lenses where, you know, I have – my distance vision is crystal clear now, and I can read and work on the computer, and they took a little bit of getting used to, but I actually prefer this to just reading glasses. And the reason is because I just wear them all the time. So I'm never looking for them. I don't lose them. I literally just wear them all the time, and they really don't bother me. So I've been thinking, you know, do I go back and try the LASIK thing? And the more I think about it and the more I learn about health and our medical system and all the things we don't know, I think I'm going to stay away from it. I just think the less I let the medical community do to my body, the better off I'm going to be.
Yeah, because there was on the news last week, I heard that the third most common cause of death in this country now is medical malfunctions or people not following their medication correctly. And it's like unbelievable.
The medical community as a whole, whether it's prescription drugs, medical procedures, medical malpractice, getting infections while you're in the hospital or at the doctor's office, when you add those things up, every time you come in contact with our medical community, your chance of dying goes way up. And it is, you're right, it is the third leading cause of death now. That is really scary.
Yeah, I'm not going to a hospital. They're full of sick people. So,
exactly.
Okay, that's all I got. Thank you much. Yeah.
All right, that's all I need. Thanks for the call. Yeah, I'm kind of glad that I didn't get the – and I really wanted LASIK. I really did. And they told me it just wasn't a good idea because my eyes were still changing too much. And I'm glad now. Glasses are kind of a pain, but I don't mind them now that I wear them all the time. I tried contacts. Doesn't work for me. I think I'm just going to stay away from the medical community as much as possible. Let's go to Ohio. Ken, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Great to talk with you.
Yeah, what can I help you with?
Kevin, I'm set up for the CMC for the first time. Looking forward to that. And I'd like to have you help me or have Brittany possibly get me started on all the accounting aspects. I purchased it, just need somebody to hold my hand, you know, instruct me, and wondered if that might be available.
Absolutely. And first off, congratulations on making the commitment and the investment to come to CMC. You are absolutely going to love it. And yes, we have a lot of resources available around accounting and taxes all week long. So there are sessions, you know, for the group, it's actually part of Lane 2. There are sessions where we're going to go over the accounting software and how to use it. We're going to go over a lot of tax stuff, deductions, and those kind of things. We're going to answer a lot of questions. But there's also one-on-one time available. And you can sign up for one-on-one when you get here. We have lots of it in lots of different areas. But we can do one-on-one accounting help with profit gauges. We can do one-on-one tax help and tax reviews. So, yeah, there's a tremendous amount of opportunity throughout the week to do one-on-ones.
Awesome. One comment for you on LASIK. I had it in 99, and it was great for a while until my right cornea destabilized, and I can no longer get it corrected to 20/20 anymore. So there are side effects to everything.
You know, I know some people who would just probably beating on their steering wheel right now, screaming, no, there's nothing wrong with it. I did it. It worked great. And I believe them. I'm just, the more I read about all medical procedures, prescription drugs, all of that stuff, the more I've decided I'm just staying away from it. You know, glasses aren't that big of a deal. And I'm just, no matter how many people tell me they did it and they loved it, I've pretty much made up my mind. I'm just not going to do it. I'm going to stay away from that kind of stuff. And if you've done it and you love it, great. If you're thinking about doing it, don't let me influence you. This is just my decision. I've read an awful lot of books that have scared me away from the medical community. Unless my arm is hanging off and needs reattached, I'm probably not going to the doctor or the hospital. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rothenberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Boy, we're just flying through this hour. We're down to the final segment, so I'm going to get right back to the calls. We're off to California. Chuck, welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. I'm fixing to change companies here in this next week, and they offer a percentage program with the 65% or mileage, which is, I believe, $1.10 for anything under $1,300, $1 for anything over $1,400. I'm used to being paid per mile now, hauling reefer, but is it better to go, this is going to be doing flatbed work, is it better to do percentage in flatbed or just take the safe route and do per mile?
Good question. I really, really prefer percentage. I like the opportunity, not certainly not the guarantee, but the opportunity to figure out ways to make more money. And the way you do that in this industry is you start to learn about what lanes pay better, what areas pay better, what cities pay better. That to me is challenging. I like to learn that, and I like that control that I'm not just locked into a certain number no matter what I do. Like you said, it is safe. You know, right now rates aren't as strong as they used to be, so a mileage contract that really didn't change anything. But flatbed rates now are still really strong. I mean, last week flatbed rates were still on the spot market, were still holding about $1.90 a mile. And that spot market, meaning that there's already probably a broker taking a piece out of that. So let's assume then that it could be 10%, let's call it 15% higher than that at the customer, meaning, you know, we could add another 30 cents. So, you know, customers are probably paying $2.20 on average a mile. And if you were to get 65% of that, well, you'd still almost be down about the same place you would be on the mileage contract. Because I'm assuming that's mileage plus fuel surcharge, right?
I believe so. What I am encouraged about, like you said, is learning the different freight lanes and whatnot.
Yeah.
My understanding is when they send me load information, they're going to send me four or five, whatever loads are within 50 or 100 miles from me. They're going to send it all to my Qualcomm, and it's my responsibility, you know, to pick which lane I want or which load I want to take. But they'll also show me what they're making, what I'm making, and what the surcharge is. So I'll be able to see
it
all before I make my choice.
Yeah, so I would definitely choose that if it were me. Even if I sat down and did the numbers and averaged about the same on either contract, I would take the percentage because averages are just that. They're just averages. The thing with the mileage contract is it is what it is. I can't change it. I would know that if the average guy was making $1.30 a mile on this percentage contract, I could make $1.50 or $1.60. It just takes time to dig in, find the right lanes, learn that kind of stuff. So for me, even if somebody said, no, you make about the same either way, I would take the percentage contract. Now, here's something else I would do. I would call them today and say, hey, can you send me anywhere between 5 and 10 settlements from somebody who's already on this contract? You know, block out their name and their personal information, but I want to see what kind of money people are making.
I asked that already because I heard you say that before, and they said no for legal reasons. They can't do it.
That's not true. That worries me a little. There's no legal reason why they can't block out the information, which is easy to do in today's world, even if we're doing this digitally or whatever. It's a simple procedure. Block out their personal information, and there is no legal reason why they can't send that to me. That would worry me a little bit.
I went the opposite way with it. I asked them that question. They said no. So I figured, why not start pestering every driver that I see that drives for this company and asking them questions, what they're making, what they're averaging, you know, and that. All those books at the truck stop are great to look at for pretty pictures, but it does me no good if I don't know what the guy is actually really doing. So I asked 10, 15 drivers that I ran into, and they were very, you know, all of them seemed to be very happy. They all say the same thing. You're going to get out of it what you put into it, and it's just like any other truck company. It's ups and it's downs. You just got to be able to do the best you can.
Yep, you've got this figured out. You're doing exactly what I would have recommended. So, go with the percentage contract on this. Start learning rates and lanes, and you're going to be just fine. Let's go to California. Steve, welcome to the program.
Yeah, good afternoon, Kevin. So I hear you talk a lot about – yeah, I hear you talk a lot about, you know, when to incorporate, and there always seems to be a certain revenue number you're looking for before you recommend an owner-operator incorporate. And I was thinking about that and just wondering, you know, what additional, you know, expenses, what additional costs are placed on an owner-operator to the point where, you know, he needs to be making a certain amount before he does that. And I was just wondering if you would share that formula or that, you know, that ROI point with us.
Sure. And it's based on a couple assumptions that, you know, if we are going to incorporate, the IRS wants to make sure we're taking a reasonable wage for the work we do. So I would love to be able to tell somebody, you know, take $20,000 as a wage, take the rest as distributions, and we'll save a ton of tax money. But I don't think that's reasonable. I think when you look at what an owner-operator is doing, he's doing the driving, he's doing paperwork, he's running the business. We think the bottom end for most guys probably $45,000 to $50,000 in salary pretty safely. So if we look at that and the guy's only netting $55,000, there's just not enough of an advantage there in my opinion. So we usually say if you're paying tax on about $65,000 and we're going to pull $50,000 out as a wage, $45,000 or $50,000, the other $20,000 is going to save us roughly 15%. So we're looking at, what is that, about $3,500 in savings. But we also have to remember that there are costs. We have the initial filing fees, $500 to $1,000. Depending on the state, we have annual filing fees. And then we have to pay somebody to do a corporate tax return, which can, and we still have to do a personal tax return. So now we have two to pay for. And we have to pay somebody to process our payroll. So by the time we do the additional accounting, the additional payroll processing, the extra tax return every year, the filing fees, and the time involved, we need to have two bank accounts now, which we may or may not when we're a sole proprietor. We have to keep our expenses separate. We can't commingle our money. So when we add all that up, I want to see at least about $3,500 in savings or so from doing this. Does that make sense?
Indeed. I didn't know if, you know, you took into consideration the liability aspect of incorporating.
I don't. And I'll tell you why. Being in this industry and talking about this for 30 years and looking at the reality of things, most lawsuits aren't going anywhere near a court unless the attorneys think they can recover about $1 million or more. They're just not messing around with stuff under that. Most of that's going to be covered by insurance. If you're leased to a carrier, which a lot of the people that I'm talking to are, the carrier's the best insurance they have. They're the ones assuming all the liability. Their name's all over everything, and they have money. Most owner-operators, even if it came to a lawsuit, why would an attorney bother? What are they going to get out of them? I mean, they can't take their home. They can't take retirement accounts if they're set up properly. And what's left to go after? And on top of that, if it is a one-truck owner-driver and he incorporates for protection, he was still holding the steering wheel. He could still be found liable personally for this. Kind of why I think the liability issue just is kind of a non-issue for the kind of people I'm talking to. Now, if somebody has multiple trucks, their own authority, they own some real estate, some rental properties, clearly a good, well-structured, you know, business or several businesses to shield everything makes a lot of sense. When I'm talking to a one-truck guy who's still the one holding the steering wheel and he probably doesn't have a whole lot of assets, I don't see the point.
Okay. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. There's the music. That means I've got to get out of here. Time just flies by during the week with only an hour, but we'll see you next time. Thanks for joining me. Be safe. Be profitable. be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody. Thanks. We'll see you back here tomorrow for the Power Hour and general questions.